Accession number 14975, Mr. William Rochester, Reel 10.
Mr. Rochester, Reel 10. You were discussing the living conditions that you were experiencing in the sedan.
It was quite all. It was hot and dry, and the sand was all over. For all we had grass in our place, you still got a lot of sand about in your room. Our room was at the end of a building, and there was four of us in. It was wide enough to have four beds down, and we had the metal bunks, metal cupboards on the wall, and between the beds, wardrobes. You had a wardrobe to hang your clothes in, and then they had this metal thing on the wall there. And I proved them to be dangerous. I didn't try to, mind. I came in one day, and I'd been out for a swim early, about 5 o'clock in the morning. We went for a swim in the pool. Two or three of us come back, then we had to get ready for PT. Well, I opened the cupboard door to get something out, left it open, I must have done, I turned round, and I think I was putting my vest on, and my arm went up like that, and I hit the cupboard, corner of the cupboard, with my elbow. I remember that. Next thing I remember, I'm lying flat on my back, looking at the ceiling, and Sergeant Drayton and Sergeant Hans, were bending over me. And I thought, hey, I got up once, what am I doing down here? And they said, that's what we want to know. So they pulled me up, and I was perfectly all right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with me. But I said, what happened? He said, well, I don't know. He said, you must have hit something up there. You just flopped down on the floor. And it just hit something on my elbow. And I finished up looking at the shingle on the top. I thought, you have to be careful and shut them doors.
Had you still the native help that you had in India?
Yes, but not like India. Not as good as that. You got one did a lot of you. You didn't have much choice. That was his area. That was his room, four sergeants. He was there when you went, so you took him on. It was all right. He did his job and all that, but it was nothing like India. I got friendly with the bloke in India. I knew his family and that, but here, this one, he kept himself to himself. He was very good, but he did his work and everything. He was always there when he'd do anything for you that you wanted him to do.
Were you platoon sergeant still? Mm-hmm. Which company were you in still?
I was in B Company.
What was your role as platoon sergeant?
Looking after the platoon and taking the rap if anything went wrong. Like anybody in charge, you know. Getting the instructions of what we had to do. Any conference that was on, the sergeants were there, if it was necessary, for training. We didn't do a lot of training. It was funny kind of training because we had invisible hills between us, you know, on desert, flat desert. There wasn't any hills where we were. It was those stones and bricks, not bricks, but clots of stuff. There wasn't any flat sand. The flat sand was between Khartoum and the river and the Red Sea. We came across in a train from there. And in one part of it, there was a bloke walking in front of it. You could see him about 100 yards in front of the rail because the wind was blowing the sand over the rails, and the train only had to go at a certain speed. If it'd been too fast and there's too much sand there, it would tip it off the rails. The lads used to get out by sections and go for a run and then wait the train come up.
Was it a long journey?
It was a long journey. It was... 300 mile, I think, somewhere like that. Well, that's not a long journey, but it took us a whole day and a half, or nearly 2 days, because of the slow speed.
Were the food any better or worse than India?
I don't think so. It didn't strike me as anything. I think the assault must have been all right. I couldn't tell you.
The usual army fare.
We got one thing that struck everybody. Every time they cut the grass, we got spinach for a meal. I don't know if that's true or not, like, but it struck everybody that this is bloody spinach again today.
Was it the usual type of army food that you've been used to?
Just the same kind of food, cooked by your own, by the. I don't know who cooked it. I never saw the cook. I wasn't there long enough to see the cook.
Did the climate affect your training day in any way?
No, but not the climate. It was the layout of the land, because it was very flat. Very flat indeed. We used to do little bits of exercises outside, but the only real exercise we could do, there's a one out the book where you fire and move, where you've got a gang of people here, these people fire, these people run for a few yards and drop, they fire, then you run, because it was just silly imagining a hill in front of you that wasn't there, because you could see the blokes at the other side, you know. That was silly. So they used to try and do something that wasn't silly for your training and that. But we played a lot of hockey out there if you made the pitch yourself. We had a little truck we used to borrow, and a stick made like a hockey stick, and they used to run the truck up the line where you scraped the hockey stick at the side, you know, all the way, it made a square, and then you went around putting your other lines on, and then you got out and played hockey. If you couldn't get on the grass for one, you got outside and played out there, played hockey outside.
What was the role of the battalion in the Sudan? Why was it there?
I don't really know. I suppose it was there because the British had had troops there for a number of years. But I know towards the beginning of the war, the battalions were in there then. I mean, it was 37 when we were in there. We came home the back end of 37, December, somewhere around about December. And this is only estimating, you know. I was there about 3 months, so it must have been January when we went there. We weren't there very long. The Essex had been there over a year, and they took part in this film of the Four Feathers, you know, that with the Mahdi and all that from there. The Essex took part in that. We were there long enough. It was just about finishing when we got there, and we came in just after Christmas. Then I went on leave, and the leave was about 5 months. It was extended to about 5 months till they got a ship to take it back. We went back on the Mongolia, the P&O liner. And
did you bring your wife back with you? Was she going back with you?
No. I wasn't old enough to be recognised. I was only 24 when I got married.
So you're married, but the army didn't recognise you married?
No, I didn't. For 2 years, I wasn't recognised as being married. I got no marriage allowance or nothing at all until I was 26. I was at the depot the day I was 26, and the next day I moved into married quarters.
So you went to the Sudan, you were only there a short time, and you went on leave to England.
That's right.
Then back
to Sudan.
To the Sudan, and again short time.
And then I came back home.
Did you get involved with the native population of the Sudan at all?
Not really. We got down to the market a couple of times, and I've got an elephant somewhere. I think I've got a pair of elephants made in the bazaar by a chap. I bought a lump of tree. There was a man in charge of the place, and no matter who came in, he spoke their language. He had 7 or 8 languages at the same time, you know, talking to different people in the shop. He was fantastic. He's Egyptian. I said, I want to make a couple of elephants. Can I get the wood? I was told I can buy the wood. He said, yes. So he got some wood out and done a black centrepiece like that. Then about that big was the bark of the tree. I said, he said, well, don't let them use that. I said, well, who's going to do it for me? He said, I'll get you somebody. So he said, come back tomorrow if you can, and I'll have a chat with you, and be prepared to stay here half an hour or an hour. He said, what you do, you spend a half an hour or an hour with the man that's doing the job. When you've had enough, you just say, that's it. Pay him a few coppers, I'll tell you what to pay him. And then there'll be a bag there. You put everything in the bag and seal the bag up till you come back the next time. That makes sure you get your stuff every time, because I look after it. it's my business, you know. So I said, oh, fine. So I got a couple of pair of elephants made. They're about that big. Well, the trunk has gone now. Sometimes the head's a bit nicked off here. Well, the kids have had them, but I've had them a long time. And this fella made them for us. You know, it only cost coppers. He told me what to pay. I said, that's ridiculous. He said, no, you can't be too bad to spoil everybody else. He'll be all right.
Did the population give any trouble at all?
No. Oh, before we left Bombay to go there, we had a letter from whoever, I can't remember the battalion that was in there, that was coming out, you know, where we were going in, because the Essex were on the other side of the river. I can't remember what it was. But there was a letter came out, and it was copied in Bombay, and each company got one, and it was on the North Company notice board. So, and it was telling us about a brothel. the 21 Club or something. It was somewhere on the desert, about four or five miles outside of the town. If you wanted to go there, you have to get a taxi to go there, you know, outside the town. And I said, oh, that's funny. And it explained all about it. And it was regular. It was registered and everything for the battalion. And there was two soldiers working in there. And when anybody went, you got to give your names to the soldier, the duty man there. He took your name and your number and everything that was there and the time you were there and what number bint you were with. That was the bint. They were all bints and they were all numbered. That went down in your book. Now, if you got gonorrhea or anything at all and your name was on that book, you were okay. So the nobby, the Sergeant Major, Nobby Clark, he was reading this out to... And he said, look at this bloody thing. Before he put it up, you know, he got the sergeants in. He said, look at this. He read it out to us, and let's all have a look at the radar. That's what it's fantastic. He said, I said to him, I wonder who they've got for prostitutes up there. He said, ah, the faintest idea. I said, neither have I, but I'm just, it's the thing you wonder, you see. I said, we were curious, obviously curious about it, you know. It sounded and it looked funny, it's so many miles out in the desert away from us, but it was regular, you know, all regular and everything, and these people working in it, all described on this sheet of paper. So Nobby said, well, I tell you what, there's one thing I'd like to do. I'd like to go and have a look at it when we get there. I said, well, you'll have to wait till you get there and, you know, and see somebody, see the adjutant or someone down there and talk to them. So he eventually, after being there, settled in maybe a week or so before, you know, settled in when they got to draft people out and we were on our own, he came across. He said, I've had a word with the sergeant, with the adjutant, and he said, we can get a party together and go and have a look, that if you want to look at them. I said, well, who's going with you? What about the Sergeant Majors? All the Sergeant Majors going up, they're all married men, they should have. He said, I'm not married. I said, well, that doesn't matter, you might be caught. You know, so there was about three or four sergeant majors went up, and a couple of sergeants got asked to attend. And nobody said, I'd like you with us, Bill. You'll go to have a look around. He said, I know what your attitude's like, you know, about keeping off them from what you had in Bombay. I said, yeah, I'd like you to go. Well, we went up, and it's easy 5 miles. We went up with an army truck from the battalion. There was an officer with us as well. I can't remember his name, but I remember he was supposed to be in charge of us. But Nobby was taking the charge of Sergeant Major. And yeah, we got there, and it was a proper camp, like you see in the desert, you know, and you see the desert song, you see the palace in it, a big wall, great big wall all the way around in the middle of sand, you know, and then a big door to open. You go into the door, and you get in there, and there's a porch with it, open space inside. Then there was all these. The first one you went to here was the office. You had to go into the office here. Then all the rest, there was little doors all the way around. There must have been about 20 around in this place. So we went in there, and there was two lads in there from the Essex Regiment that they handed over from the one that, you know, they were, and they explained everything about it. And there was a woman in charge, and she was a tall woman, very, very fat and plump, and as black as the ears of spades, polished, you know. You know, you polish your black shoes, her skin was shining black, right? And she could speak English of a kind, you know, half and half. So Nobby took charge, the young officer. I mean, I don't know what he didn't, I don't think he knew what to do at the time. He wasn't very old, but I think he'd been pushed into something he didn't want. But Nobby wanted to go. And he said he would like to go around and have a look at the place and examine it and that, you know. And we went around, we saw all these girls standing in the doorways as we went round in there. There wasn't a decent looking girl among them. There were country girls, I don't know what they were anyhow, but there was none that I think would give anybody at all the feeling that they wanted to go in with. So we had a look around there, then we were shown the bathrooms and shower rooms where you went to afterwards, and that, and then we had a good scrum shot, a good look around, and then I think we were nearly kicked out because nobody wanted to go with them. We got out anyhow of the truck and got back again, and the sergeant majors had to give a talk to their companies about what it was like and advising them to keep away from it, you know, in the back. And I don't think we ever had any problems at all. I never heard of any problems. Mind, we weren't there all that long, another couple of months or so, and we were home. So it's by Christmas we were back home.
Where was your barracks in relation to the town? In the middle or where?
No, it's just outside. Just outside the town, just on the edge of the town. It wasn't too far away. You know, the Nile runs down, what they call them? Gordon's Palace is on the Nile. But there's a road runs down the front, a main road that runs down to here now. And the palace is around there. They're putting gates on there to the river. And then they got stopped. They couldn't do that because this was public affair. So that had moved the gates to close up to there. But you could still go down here. So you have sentries on the opening here. You're going to go across it. And about, it wasn't very far because we marched down, the guards. We went on guard for a week. 3 miles, 2.5, 3 miles up the road was the camp.
This would be the palace for the British representative.
That's right.
And you were guarding?
Gordon's Palace. Mm. Sir John Anderson was the man. And I'd had a month guard with him in Bombay. You went on guard for a month. And you took a platoon guard, you know, about four to six changes. And you stayed there in his grounds, in your hut, your house, and that, your own house in the gardens, you know. And he had two lovely daughters, and they were only around, I think, 16, 17, something like that, the pair of them. And they were excellent to the guards people. One of them used to come down every morning to see if you were all right, anything you wanted, and bring books and papers down for you. That was in Bombay. And when we moved to Khartoum, the first one I saw when she came in, looked at her, said, "I recognise you, miss." She said, "Do you?" I said, "Yes, I saw you. I was on guard in Bombay and I saw you." She said, "I sure it wasn't my sister, you know." I said, "Well, I think I must have seen both of you because I was there a month up there. We did a monthly." "Oh, that's right, you did. What's your name?" "No, that didn't mean anything at all." I said, "I didn't think it would, but we're here." "Well, I'm here. Anything you want, you see me." And the barrel come down, you know, any time, press the button and the barrel come down if you want anything. And they were marvellous to us. And whenever John Anderson was going out, and whenever we had to form the guard, you know, to salute him when he went in and out, we always got a couple of hours' notice from their two lasses. they were fantastic.
Did you mount guards in the usual regimental style?
Yes. Yeah.
So the month you were there, you're appearance would have to be really first class.
Oh yes, well, in Khartoum, we only did a week in Khartoum, and you'd just lay around here because it wasn't you couldn't get out into town or anything like that. You were on duty all the time, so you just you listened to the radio. You had a look at the palace, and the entrance into the palace, you go through a big door and you come to what was, I suppose, the armory, like Bransworth Castle. You go into the armory, big long building, then a space here, then two stairs went up to the top there. Now this one, at this side, right in the top corner up there, there was a plaque, a big brass plaque. You couldn't read it. But down below, there was another one which told you what was on there. That plaque up there was in as near as possible to the top of the steps where Gordon was killed. Right in the corner where they both meet, you know, like that. Right there, a great big thing like that, brass up behind it. Then the little one down here to tell you what was on up there. I thought, that's fantastic.
Were you guarding anything else?
Just the palace. Just Gordon. Just the palace.
You'd have guards back at the barracks, presumably.
No, I don't think so. Oh, well, yes, they'd have the regimental guard. There's always a regimental guard. I mean, in England there's a regimental guard. The depot there's a guard on, as such, yes. Duty guard, that was all.
The climate itself, as you said, was extremely hot.
It was hot, yes.
Was your day divided so that you missed the worst of the heat?
Well, I think it was a sort of automatic thing that things stopped. More, you know, you went inside, actually. Things stopped and you went inside. It was cooler in the building than sitting in any shade or anything at all. Quite a lot of people went out the swimming pool. It was quite a good length, a good swimming pool.
Was there any problem with your health through the climate?
No, I don't think so. I had a slight bit of trouble, but it wasn't the climate. When we first went there, the swimming pool was empty. Then we were going around, you know, doing various things, getting settled in and all this kind of stuff, moving stuff around and. Two of us went across to the pool to have a swim, but when we got there was nothing in it, so we did something we shouldn't do, that was go in the Nile. So we went in the Nile for a swim naked, of course, because we didn't have any kit, but there was nobody there, so we had a swim, come back good dressed and away. Now sometime after that, when I put my handkerchief on my finger and pushed it in my ear, it came out with blood on. And I didn't know what was the matter, so I went and saw the doctor. And he sent me to see somebody else in the barracks. I said, like a first aid post from what I remember. Anyhow, I went in there to see this fella, and he said he had an awful lot of questions. But how old are you? Do you like the army? Do you like the stuff in the army? Do you want to get out of the army? And all this. I said, no, I love the army. I like it. I want to stay in the army. Have you done punctured your ear or anything? I said, no. What have you done? What have you done since you come here? You've only been here a few days. So I tried to remember and tell him, and I said, I forgot. We came for a swim in the pool the first or second day we're here. There was no water, so we went in the Nile. That's breaking the law. You should not swim in the Nile. There should be notices of us. I said, well, we never saw any. So, well, you're not allowed to swim in there. There must be some bugs or something in the river that they keep you out of it anyhow. So he said, are you sure you like the army? I said, oh, yes, I want to stay in the army. I said, why, what's the matter? He said, well, I think you're trying to get out. I think you've punctured your ear or you've done something with your eardrum to get out of the army. I said, oh, no. And baby, no, I want to stay in the army. And, you know, I was up in front of the colonel about it. And he And the adjutant stuck up for me. He backed me up and said, and the old man said, like, he said that, well, I didn't think you wanted to be out because you've got a good record, you know, you've been on a number of courses and you've qualified all right and you're doing quite well. I said, I don't want to be out at all. Sir. So the adjutant and the old man, I kept in, otherwise I would have been chucked out. And I still don't know what it was with. And I still get a little bit of trouble with it now and then.
You've mentioned one or two of the courses. I think PT was one of them. What kind of courses had you been on?
I was on PT, I was on boxing course, and athletic course. Well, they like float, you know, together. And I was on the musketry course. They were in India. I was on an education course in England. And I was on a, I don't know what it was. I went down to Scotch Corner. It was a group course for officers and senior people, no sergeant majors and young officers. And it was all about the war, you know. And my job, the one I had to talk about, was about digging a trench, a similar type of trench that they had in the First World War. And you got a book, you know, and in the book there's the sketch of this trench, how you dug your trench, what angles you put the sides, where you put the timbers and what you packed it up with, what you did at the bottom and all this kind of rubbish. So that was my exam piece at Catterick. No, down at Scotch Corner, opposite the door in Scotch Corner. Well, it's difficult to see it now, the way the roads are made, but there used to be, there's only the one road then. And you went across, and there was another small road went down to a village. Well, we were stationed in the village, but we did the work in the school, in the Scotch Corner.
Was this an immediate pre-war course, or after the Second World War started?
Yeah, this was, I don't know, maybe 43 or something like that. I might be able, when I get my book out, I might be able to get the dates on it to put on that sheet. Just I've got a list, there's a list in my book, you know.
You attended many courses all the time you're in the army.
I've had about five or six, good ones.
Who was commanding the battalion in the Sudan?
Oh, I wish you wouldn't ask me that. I really couldn't tell you.
Do you recall any of the officers of the battalion at this time?
Yeah, Nigel Port was in the battalion. Monty Fiore was at Khartoum. Not the corner. No, YI was at the depot. VA was at the depot.
What were they like, Montefiore and the poet?
Oh, if you were his pal, you were very good. If you were one of Monty's men, you bought your wristwatches and things.
He was a wealthy man.
Yes, he was very good. But he had a selection of various people, you know. And if you're a Monty's boy, you were all right. You know. He looked after them. He got them. He even had a team. I think it was a hockey team. I'm not sure. A hockey team. Monty's hockey team. And he played other people. Hockey. And he was quite good, actually. Monty. I liked him. I'm never one of his boys, though. I never fitted in with him somehow. But in Khartoum. We had a platoon commander. His father used to sign the pound notes and the 5 and 10 pound notes at the Bank of England. You know, there's a bloke around there, got his chief cashier, is it, or something? Well, his father was chief cashier. He used to sign his note. I can't remember his name. Now, he got us a trip down into crocodile shooting. Into Abyssinia, we went down the Nile, turned east, and crossed the border. I had to get permission to go into the border. It must have been just in Abyssinia, I think it was. There, had an army 1500 weight truck with a cover on, and about six or seven people, and I went off there for about 4 or 5 days.
You weren't one of them?
No. I tried to get on, but I didn't get. He took his pal. He had a couple of lads from Sunderland who were boxers. And I've been trying to think of their names, but One was a happy place, really, and they had a great time.
What were the officers like in the regiment, in the battalion?
They're all right, as far as I know.
There no problems with any of them at all?
No, I don't think so.
What are your memories of your fellow NCOs and men? You've mentioned one or two, of course.
Well, I only had one problem when I first went to India, because I was young and I was corporal.
We've got this on the tape. Yeah. This is where you had to tell them that it wasn't your fault. Yeah.
He objected to me being promoted and out there. That was the only thing I've ever had.
We've got that on the tape.
I think I was all right because I was a bit of a sportsman, and I think that helps an awful lot. I played hockey and rugby for the battalion. I played an odd game of football for the battalion. The RSM, who ran the sports, hockey and rugby and that, and football, he said, you know damn football, but I know you can run and kick a ball, so I'm putting you centre forward. And I had two footballers, inside left and inside right. Tate was one of them, I can't remember the other one. They did all the footballing and put the ball and shout, run, run, run! And all I used to do was run and hit it. And if it was going towards the goal, it was a goal. If it wasn't, it wasn't. And